to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. If you do a quick search on feral cats or outdoor cats, like I did in preparation for today's show, you will find a huge number of articles and stories about them and about how communities are wrestling with ways to deal with these cats. In Wausau, Wisconsin, to take a recent example, the Public Health and Safety Committee is about to hear presentations about handling feral cats that would include alternatives to euthanizing cats who are captured. So how should feral, or some people call them wild, cats be dealt with in a way that's best for them, for other animals, and for communities? How large of a problem are free-roaming cats in the country, and what are the best, most humane, and most effective methods to approach the issues associated with these cats? To address these questions and many more, I'm sure, I'm pleased to welcome Peter Wolf, Cat Initiatives Analyst at Best Friends Animal Society. Peter's role involves the application of research to a range of communications and policy-related projects. Peter's also the founder of Vox Felina, a blog featuring in-depth analysis of science and policy issues related to the management of free-roaming cats. And he sits on the board of directors of Fix Nation, one of the country's most highly regarded TNR low-cost spay-neuter clinics. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Peter, cats have been living around people, indoors and outdoors, for eons. Am I correct to use the term problem when referring to these cats?
Yeah, it's a when it comes to defining our terms, there's actually several that probably should be laid out. We call these cats community cats, and for a number of reasons. When we use the term feral cat, and I think that kind of it evokes certain images that sort of make it seem like this is a more of a problem. Certainly, from certain perspectives, say of shelters that are already overcrowded and are having to then figure out how to deal with cats who generally don't make good adoption candidates, it certainly can be seen as a problem. But we tend to think of it as more of a challenge, and one that we're demonstrating time and time again. There are better ways to manage the populations of these cats than has been done in the past.
Yes, and we'll touch upon those. Peter, so let's talk about terminology a bit. So there's feral, there's free-roaming, outdoor, community cat, as you mentioned, stray, unsocialized. How are these terms used?
Yeah, so community cats is it. We sort of think of it as this big umbrella. And again, the idea being that this is an issue that needs to be handled at a community level. I mean, that's a big part of where that name comes from. A more cumbersome, and I've often used this on my blog, is stray, abandoned, and feral cats, sort of as a spectrum, if you will. I actually tell people sometimes you probably actually haven't seen a feral cat, because they're truly feral cat, meaning it's often defined as a cat that has had no human contact, was born outdoors, you know, without human contact, and never has had human contact. In a lot of cases, these cats are so shy, so fearful, so elusive, you almost never see them. Much more common are the cats that have been abandoned or during the recent economic downturn, people moved and maybe left the cats behind, or they lost their homes or whatever. So these are cats that were social but have reverted back to their sort of wild nature, if you will. So it's this whole spectrum, and of course, it's quite fluid. A cat who reaches adulthood without socialization, pretty unlikely to end up being a lap cat, although it's not unheard of. The cats who have been left outside or strayed from home or whatever, that people often interpret to be feral. In fact, those cats often, under the right circumstances, will end up back indoors, and, you know, kind of this cycle is sort of completed. They had this middle period when they were apparently wild or feral, and then they're, you know, fortunes change and they end up back indoors, lazy house cats on our sofas.
Can you give us an estimation of the number of these cats in the U.S.?
That is one of the trickiest questions to answer. You'll see estimates. Well, you'll see estimates all over the place. Here too, it gets a little tricky because sometimes the estimates are referring to unowned cats plus owned cats who are allowed outdoor access. But if we talk about just being the unowned, again, community cats, you see estimates as low as 10 million and as high as 90 million. And that really broad range, almost an order of magnitude difference, speaks to, in some ways, how little we understand the issue, but also the challenges. In fact, doing surveys of wildlife is in some ways easier. You can imagine if you were trying to survey in your own community, in your own neighborhood, how many cats are out there. There's unless they're actually wearing a collar, there's really no way to distinguish an owned cat who happens to be outdoors at the time you spot them to one that's really unowned. Temperament or degree of shyness is not terribly useful. So it's an enormous challenge to get a handle on the numbers, at least on a national level. In a community, again, there has been some really interesting work censusing numbers of cats. And, of course, it's important when you talk about, and I know we're going to get to this, the trap, neuter, return. If we want to be able to demonstrate its effectiveness, we have to have some sense of a baseline against which to compare, the after effects of TNR.
Yeah, very good. And we are going to get to that soon. Peter, give us a little background about how they live, these community cats. What do they eat? How do they find protection from the elements? That sort of thing.
Right. So the community cats cats in general, of course, and you kind of alluded to this in your intro. They've been living around humans for many, many years and are incredibly resourceful. And this, of course, allows the formerly pampered house cat, when that cat goes missing or is left behind when his or her owner moves, to revert back and in fact, very often thrive outdoors. You ask, what do they eat? Cats tend to be found where people are found. So just as people are not randomly distributed throughout the country, they congregated in urban areas and suburban areas, as are the cats. And again, that's where they're able to find, whether it's garbage or to catch their own prey, or very often, and there's been some really interesting studies that have found anywhere from, say, 8% up to maybe 15% of people surveyed report feeding stray cats. Now, they don't know. This could be a neighbor's indoor-outdoor cat that is, double-dipping because they're offering something better on their patio, or they could truly be unowned cats. So a lot of the support for these cats, whether it's the food, shelter, I'm in Phoenix, very similar climate to where you are. The shelter, here the concern is more the heat, of course, but in northern climates, a lot of the caregivers build shelters for winter. But again, the cats are remarkably resourceful and resilient when it comes to making it on their own.
Peter, you mentioned that these community cats can do very well on their own and they can thrive. So the notion that these community cats live short, painful, diseased lives is not necessarily the case?
No, this is a misconception. But to be clear, it's also it is certainly a valid concern, whether you love these cats or hate these cats. We understand there are concerns out there, and even folks who really love these cats and care for them do worry about their health. What we know, and there's been studies on this, but we also know Best Friends operates programs around the country, and the vast, vast majority of the cats who come into these programs off the streets they all go through a check with veterinarian and vet techs. very healthy cats. Really, again, the overwhelming majority are thriving out there, indicating in part that the cat has figured it out. But also, in a lot of cases, even if we don't know who's taking care of them, almost certainly somebody is, or in a lot of cases, more than just one person. Again, another reason to call them community cats is because they're cared for at a community level in many cases.
Very good. Don't go away. More with Peter Wolf right here on Animals Today.
As temperatures climb, please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org. That's the letter A, aianimals.org.
Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner from Advancing the Interests of Animals. And here are a few more ways you can be kind to animals, beginning with this. Report suspected animal abuse or neglect. If you see an underfed dog or an animal left in a car on a hot day, report it right away. You could be saving a life. Try a vegetarian diet, even just for a week. Decreasing and then stopping consumption of animals is probably the best way to show your appreciation for them and for the environment, too. Don't buy cosmetics or household products that have been tested on animals. That's easy these days. And finally, don't wear clothing made from animals. Begin by saying no to fur and gradually give up animal products like leather and wool. It's easier than you might imagine. This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit us at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org.
Years ago, the family doctor was a fixture in communities across the country. He'd come into your home and personally treat whoever needed help. He was part of the family. And while that practice has faded into memory, there is someone who keeps the tradition of personal health care alive, your local Health Mart pharmacist. While much of healthcare has become confusing and impersonal, you can drop by your neighborhood Health Mart pharmacy anytime, where your pharmacist will know you by name, not by refill number. That's the spirit of caring you can expect from each independently owned Health Mart pharmacy around the country. So even if a doctor won't be stopping by your house today, you can stop by your local Health Mart pharmacy to get the advice, encouragement, and expert guidance you deserve. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Does the economy woes and the stock market volatility have you concerned about your ability to invest for retirement? Did you know that you can diversify part or all your retirement into more secure and potentially more lucrative investments? iDirect can show you how to buy real estate, tax liens, and more inside your IRA or 401k rollover. The investment opportunities are really limitless. You don't need to be at the mercy of the stock market with your IRA or 401k. You have options. Call now to learn more about buying alternative investments inside your retirement plan. To get the most value for this investment, you must have $25,000 in rollable retirement funds. Call iDirect now and get the info packet on self-directed IRA investing. 877-278-1030. 877-278-1030. 877-278-1030. That's 877-278-1030.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
Welcome back to Animals Today. We're talking to one of the leading experts on community cats, Peter Wolf. Peter, so what are the problems people have when many cats or a colony of them live in the vicinity? Quite frequently, there are news stories about neighborhoods, homeowners associations, and office buildings trying to address the cats. It does seem to be a widespread issue.
Yes. And again, this is where the name community cats or the term seems very fitting, because you're exactly right. And this is often these sorts of stories make the evening news, or we read about them online. Probably there's a couple issues here. The greatest, the probably most common complaint has to do with nuisance behaviors. So whether that's cats climbing up on cars in an apartment complex, say, or using your garden as litter box, or the spraying and yowling often associated with these cats. And I'm actually speaking here at the National Animal Care and Control Association conference, which, as you can imagine, most of the attendees are animal control officers, and I expect we'll be having great conversations about these sorts of things in the next couple days, because, of course, those are the folks that are often on the first, kind of in the trenches, when the call comes in about, I've got cats in my alley, or cats are getting into my garden, or whatever. We often focus with when we sterilize and vaccinate these cats using the trap, neuter, return technique. We often focus on, you know, this is to stabilize and then reduce their numbers. But a really important benefit is most of the nuisance behaviors are resolved as well as a result of that. So, for example, because so many of the nuisance behaviors are associated with mating behaviors. And with any of the Best Friends programs around the country, and others certainly do this too, for folks who just simply don't want the cats in their yard, that is certainly their rights. And we offer humane deterrents. There's a number of really interesting, effective humane deterrents on the market that offer an alternative to just having the cats hauled off to the shelter.
Okay, so these problems cannot be ignored. These community cats cannot be ignored in many cases, and people are compelled to act. And on prior Animals Today shows, we've had advocates for a management system referred to, and you alluded to it, as TNR, Trap, Neuter, Return. And I believe you're an advocate of this. Describe it for us, please, Peter.
Sure. Trap, Neuter, Return, or TNR, is a technique The cats are humanely trapped. They are then sterilized in many programs, in all of the Best Friends programs, and in many around the country, the cats are also vaccinated. Not every program does that as standard practice. If you look at rabies data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, you'll see that rabies in cats is not evenly distributed across the country, largely East Coast, Mid-Atlantic states. So vaccination, again, is all of the Best Friends programs included, but in some programs that's optional. But again, so the cats are trapped, they're sterilized, vaccinated if that's part of that program, and then they're returned to the area where they were captured after a certain number of hours, certain bit of time to recover from the surgery. And again, this has been done in this country even before it had a name, but it was essentially imported, if you will, from parts of Europe, and really took off in the 90s. And again, today it's becoming I don't know if I would say standard operating procedures for communities across the country, but it's, I think we're well past a tipping point where that's the case.
So what we're trying to accomplish with TNR is not just to allow the cats to live disease-free and not transmit diseases, but also population control, correct?
Correct. So to kind of circle back to your question, assuming, let's say if we're talking about 10 or 12 cats at a particular location, a business location, apartment complex, the cats would be, ideally, they would all be caught at one time, through the TNR method, and so the cats go right back. So the next day, you still have those 10 or 12 cats. They're not, you know, at some point, socialized ones might be homed or that sort of thing, but let's assume all 10 or 12 are there, you've ended the breeding cycle, and as I mentioned, the vast majority of the nuisance complaints are going to go away on their own because these cats are sterilized and vaccinated. And then, again, if they're getting up on cars or something like that, there's humane deterrence, there's other methods. And then the numbers slowly decrease over time. As you can imagine, this is not an overnight solution. The cats didn't appear overnight, and they're not going to disappear overnight. What we know from the traditional, and by traditional I mean the cats would be rounded up either by animal control folks or maybe you pay a service to come in. If there is, you know, ample food, water, shelter at that location, which there was, otherwise the cats wouldn't have been there, in time more cats will show up. And again, if they're not, you know, there's not vigilance there, it doesn't take long before you will have 10 or 12 or more because they're able to breed at a pretty rapid pace. And again, that unfortunately, when you see the story in the news, it's usually very often the case that none of the cats were sterilized. It, you know, this was a situation that got out of hand. And of course, by managing through vigilance, getting any newcomers sterilized right away, you avoid so many of those issues.
How are these programs actually implemented in the U.S.? Who's involved? What resources or approvals are needed, Peter?
Sure. That's a really great question. There's a great range from, I sometimes use the term freelance TNR folks, just citizens who, for whatever reason, it could be they just want to reduce the number of cats, but they're not particularly cat lovers. They just want a humane solution to address this issue, and maybe they're just doing it on their own, and they're just going to go to a shelter or to a local TNR group in their community, borrow some traps, and again, kind of on a freelance basis, if you will. And then there's, again, a number of TNR groups who do that, and they're often, you know, closely associated with high-volume, low-cost or no-cost spay-neuter clinics, which also do pet cats. So they kind of tap into an existing community resource and have this just for community cats. And then you get into, say, the kind of programs that Best Friends runs, these community cat programs, where just to give you an example, our program in Albuquerque, in 2.5 years, we have sterilized and vaccinated more than 8,100 cats in that community. And again, that is... it's a much larger program, and it's actually a collaboration with the shelter. So it's through that collaboration that we're able to do those kind of numbers and have the kind of impact that we do.
Very good. Don't go away. More with Peter Wolf, Cat Initiatives Analyst at Best Friends Animal Society. You're here on Animals Today. Hi, Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for listening to Animals Today. Make sure to visit us on animalstodayradio.com, where you will see all our previous shows, and you can download them free. That's animalstodayradio.com. Also, make sure to become a friend on Facebook. Animals Today gets a lot of its support from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org. And I hope you'll consider making a donation to help pay for the ongoing broadcast of Animals Today. Each week on Animals Today, we strive to bring you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animal welfare topics, and we certainly would appreciate your support. That website again is aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Breathe it in, kid. Clean, fresh air thanks to these new air handler filters. They're more energy efficient, hold more dust, and are stronger than ever. And Grainger's got over 3,000 different styles and sizes to choose from. Just ordered a new batch from Grainger.com today. I love oxygen, kid. And this facility's got some great AO2. I'm breathing easier just thinking about these air handler filters. Get some today. Get it? Got it? Good. Call, click Grainger.com/air handler, or stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
Are you concerned about the effect bug repellent chemicals have on your family's health? Now there's Cedarside, an organic bug spray. Cedarside carries a suite of pest control products made from all natural cedar oil. They kill and repel a variety of bugs, yet they're not at all harmful to people, pets, or the environment. To order, go to cedarside.com or call 800-842-1464. 800-842-1464. Cedarside, effective pest control that's safe for people, pets, and premises.
Eee!
back to the show. Cat expert Peter Wolf is with us. Peter, how strong is the evidence, and what is the evidence, that TNR, trap, neuter, return programs actually work?
So, yeah, it's a really good question. And there's different metrics by which we would measure the effectiveness of a TNR or of a community cat program. And one of the best examples actually comes from Rome, Italy. It's really interesting. They'd done a survey of more than 100 caregivers there, and as I'm sure some of your listeners know, Rome actually, you know, they really embrace the community cats there. You can go on tours as a tourist. You can visit these different places. The cats are protected by law and have been since, I believe, it was 1991. And so this study was done of these caregivers, and they found that, again, as I mentioned previously, you know, sterilizing these cats, vaccinating these cats, they don't disappear overnight. It's a matter of over time. And what this study found was over a matter of years, 2 years, 3 years, I believe at 6 years, what they observed was a 32% decrease on average of all these caregivers in the number of cats in their colonies. Again, that's an average. And really importantly, this was despite the 21-22% influx, so new arrivals. And I don't want to get, you know, too much into the numbers, but you can imagine just in a general sense, despite newcomers showing up because of strays, because of abandonment, whatever, despite new cats coming in, on average, they were still able to reduce, and again, this is over a six-year time frame, but by about a third. If you contrast that with the traditional way, again, in this country, that would mean probably a call to animal control to take the cats away. Other cats will fill that niche, and so it really remarkable accomplishment was demonstrated in this Rome study. In our probably the best example from a best friends community cat program standpoint, I mentioned earlier our Albuquerque program that's been in place for 2.5 years now. And again, there's different metrics. So some of the metrics we track there, for example, is the euthanasia rate at the shelter that we've developed this public-private partnership with. Euthanasia rate has dropped 79% in 2.5 years. Again, doing things the way we've been doing in this country for generations, absolutely unheard of. There's a photo we often use in our presentations where we talk about our Albuquerque program of empty cages. And if for folks not familiar with the shelter environment, the impact isn't necessarily clear. For folks who are familiar with the shelter environment, they can't believe it because they've never seen a bank of empty kennels other than maybe when a new building is built and then immediately the kennels are filled. So the fact that euthanasia has dropped 79%, the overall intake of cat and kittens has declined 32% over those 2.5 years. So now, again, from a sheltering standpoint, that means you're buying bandwidth. You're not overwhelming the system, and that means the adoptable cats that maybe were at risk of being euthanized because of space constraints now have a much better chance of finding a home. It also means the pressures from a disease transmission standpoint in the shelter are also greatly reduced. It's quite common to see upper respiratory infection just nosedive when these programs are implemented because, again, there's not the stresses associated with a shelter that's bursting at the seams. And then maybe what I find to be the most compelling. So the notion of euthanasia dropping, intake dropping, again, those are interesting metrics for some of us. For folks who are worried, who don't like the cats out there, that doesn't necessarily resonate with them. But this one I think really does. The intake of kittens under 8 weeks, so really young kittens, has dropped by 29% from the baseline level. And it's not a perfect, we can't claim a perfect causal relationship, but it's a really, really strong indicator that the overall number of cats is going down in the community because of this very targeted TNR effort.
It sure is. Very valuable information, Peter. What additional research, in your opinion, needs to be done about the effectiveness and value of TNR?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You really hit on an important point. What kind of long-term effectiveness? Often studies will focus on, be a year in duration, which if you're in that study or if you're appealing for funding for that sort of study, a year might seem like a long period of time. But again, what the Rome study demonstrated was at 2 years, you don't see so much of an improvement. You really need to be in it for the long haul, and we in this country need much more work. And I'm actually talking with some folks about that, about what sort of collaborative research programs could best friends be involved in that looks at this at a long-term, from a long-term perspective. There is, no doubt familiar with the term citizen science, and this is, for example, the Christmas bird count, where people are recruited every year to count birds in their backyard, that sort of thing. And over time, this sort of data becomes enormously valuable, not necessarily in terms of absolute numbers of counting necessarily. In terms of trending, it can be very, very valuable. So we're definitely interested in doing that sort of work. And again, focusing on colony level and given some of the technology out there today, especially to track these sort of things, I think the potential is really incredible.
Peter, comment a little bit about the bird versus cat controversy, which we've had visited previously on the show. Some bird advocates and organizations say that cats should be either indoor cats, pets, and should be removed from the outdoors because they're killing tremendous number of birds. How do you respond?
Yeah, just to be clear, but from a Best Friends Animal Society perspective, of course we're concerned about the welfare of all of these animals, and at its core, I think the controversy is it's often a source, or it's very hyped up. At its core, we're all interested in reducing the number of cats out there. It's a matter of how do we go about doing it. But certainly, as I mentioned, the successes we've seen in Albuquerque, the indicator that the actual number of cats in the community is going down should come as very welcome news from folks in the conservation community who might not be, and I don't mean to suggest that they're in any way insensitive to knowing that the intake at the shelter is going down or the euthanasia rate at the shelter is going down. But again, that's their concern is, but the cats are still out there. You're in quotes, in air quotes I'm using now, putting the cats back. And so that's the concern. But if we can demonstrate, yes, the cats are still out there. We're not making any more of these cats. They're out there, but they're sterilized, they're vaccinated, and in time, their numbers will be reduced. And I'll tell you, I really, as I say, the controversy is really so hyped, and I think given the fact that there's more common ground there than is often recognized, I think it's a shame because I think we could do far more working together because I don't think we're as much at cross purposes as is often portrayed. And frankly, birds, wildlife in general, face a number of threats, and it seems like by focusing on the cats, we're really missing the point and no doubt overlooking some of the greater threats to birds.
Peter, how does the general public regard this whole issue of community cats? Are people generally sympathetic or supportive of managing the colonies versus trying to capture and kill them?
That's a good question. The communities are there's a movie, I don't remember what year it was, Field of Dreams, and the kind of not tagline exactly, but one of the best lines from the movie, most memorable, was "If you build it, they will come." And we've certainly seen that with our community cat programs, is where these programs are implemented, I mean, you know, sooner set up shop, but, you know, you maybe have a phone number posted somewhere and the phone will be ringing off the hook because you're offering for the first time, probably in most people's lifetimes, a humane alternative. And so they come out of the woodwork. They didn't want to call it animal control because they knew, you know, the likely outcome that that would be. And when you're able to offer a humane alternative, people are very excited and very supportive.
Don't go away. We're talking about community cats right here on Animals Today.
That's the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them. So show dogs will be quiet in transit between shows or in the ring. So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day. Animals Today joins with Coalition to Protect and Rescue Pets in saying shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the vets who perform this inhumane, unnecessary surgery for them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice. Protect theirs. This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at AIAnimals.org.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS that you can't pay? Call now for immediate help. 866-657-8517. At Community Tax Relief, we help consumers like you. If you take on the IRS alone, you could be facing levies, liens, even wage garnishments, personal or business tax issues. If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more, they will aggressively come after you. Protect yourself and your family today from what the IRS can do to you. Call now, 866-657-8517. They can freeze your bank account, even garnish your wages. Our expert team of tax professionals can solve your tax problems once and for all. Call now for a free 5-minute tax debt analysis. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517.
Big news. Sprint's offering the hottest deal in wireless. Switch your whole family up to 10 lines to Sprint and get unlimited talk, text, and 20 gigabytes of high-speed data to share for only $100 a month for your whole account. It's double the high-speed data of the other guys for a family of four. Verizon and AT&T charge $160 and T-Mobile charges $100, and they just give you 10 gigabytes. But with Sprint, you get 20 gigabytes. That's two times the data. To make it easier, we'll even buy out your family's contract up to $350 per line. The Sprint Family Share Pack. Only $100 a month for the whole family up to 10 lines, including unlimited talk and text on America's newest network. Simply put, it's the hottest deal in wireless. So come into a Sprint store today.
Ends 9/30/14. Coverage and offer not available everywhere. Subject to credit. New line port in. Excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, international premium content. Price promo through 2015. After 2015, also pay $15 a month per line access charge. $350 via Visa prepaid card and requires online registration. Comparison is to 10 gigabyte high-speed 3 and 4G plans for 4 lines. Other data options available. Prohibited network use rules. Prioritization and throughput reduction applies. Comparison excludes additional 2 gigabytes Sprint and 1 gigabyte Verizon data promos. Restrictions apply.
Safety, safety, safety. I'm saying it three times. Studies show you need to hear something three times to remember it. So remember, safety, safety, safety is important to me, me, me. That's why I love Grainger. Grainger has the products to help keep our facilities safe and people safer. Say it with me, kid. Safety, safety, safety from Grainger, Grainger, Grainger. When you think safety, think Grainger. Get it? Got it? Good. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
So much has changed since GEICO started saving people money over 75 years ago. We weren't attached to our smartphones like today. Smartphones didn't exist. If you wanted to talk to someone, you just hollered out your back door.
Hey, Darla, want to go steady? No chance?
Okay, then. We had no privacy. But hey, with GEICO, we always had good car insurance.
GEICO, saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years.
Peter Wolf, can you talk a little bit about the biology and particularly the reproductive biology of community cats and how this information is used in managing the colonies?
Sure. So as I mentioned previously, I'm in Phoenix. In warmer climates like Phoenix, LA, Florida, you know, the whole southern part of the United States, domestic cats can breed pretty much year round. And that means an average on, say, one and a half litters per year, 3 to 4 kittens per litter. The females can have their first litter when they're very young. And so, again, you can see where it doesn't take long before the mass. Now, granted, not all of those kittens are likely to survive if left on their own and all the rest. Nevertheless, the numbers grow really, really very quickly.
Don't outdoor cats harbor diseases, Peter, like rabies, that are significant risks to people? Do managed colonies have high rates of disease that can be transmitted to people?
So in terms of rabies, again, I mentioned this a little bit previously, the distribution of rabies in cats in the U.S. is really focused primarily along the East Coast. But again, all of the Best Friends programs, we vaccinate all the cats who come through the program. Some of my colleagues like to say, sterilized and vaccinated is better than the alternative, which of course is how this has been handled in the past. So sterilizing and vaccinating these cats has an enormous public health benefit. Of course, rabies is still a risk. Again, it's one of those that really, though, gets a lot of it is overplayed often. And there's actually been studies, some really interesting work found, where it's sort of this the expensive post-exposure treatment that you and certainly some of your listeners are familiar with is often overused because of media hype. The stories make the evening news, and so it kind of snowballs and is really, really overplayed. As I say, it's a risk, but it's so minor that it's just unfortunate. It gets in the way of these programs and actually increases a risk of it because we're then not allowed to vaccinate these cats and sterilize them.
How about diseases that afflict the cats and cause them problems? What do they get, and how do you treat them in the setting of a managed cat colony besides the rabies?
There are certainly, again, there's been studies looking at the various diseases. There was one just released specific to upper respiratory infection, but some of the more interesting work, and again, some of your listeners are no doubt familiar with feline leukemia and FIV, and the studies have shown that in managed colonies, the rates of those two diseases in particular are no different from pet cats, which sounds really kind of unbelievable at first until you recognize that those two diseases in particular, the transmission is mostly caused by behaviors associated with mating and giving birth. So once you have these cats sterilized, again, those two in particular are no different than what we would see in pet cats brought to our veterinarians.
What common mistakes do people make when interacting with community cats? For example, you come across a stray or feral or a cat, just one might have this compassionate reflex to put food down and feed them. Is that okay?
So, yeah, it's a good question. The feeding of the cats, and this is a real point of contention. There's research sort of that conflicts with itself in terms of, can you actually accelerate or help the breeding cycle if you're just feeding these cats versus leaving them to their own devices? But what we at Best Friends and what anybody doing TNR recommends, and this is, I mean, it's a broken record. We just constantly, if you're feeding, you got to get them fixed. And you asked what's the most common mistake. The most common mistake, I would argue, is waiting to get them fixed. And we've all been there. We're busy, we're whatever. And before you know it, two or three cats is 12 cats. And now you're trying to find homes for the kittens and all the rest. So, and most communities have resources available, low and no cost resources, and folks who will come help. Best Friends has a number of resources at our website, bestfriends.org, whether it's I Found Kittens, whether it's, you know, give me the TNR 101, how does this all work? And that's becoming more common, so folks do have resources.
Peter, one issue we experience all the time here locally is the difficulty that shelter personnel have in determining whether a given cat entering a shelter is truly feral or simply someone's lost, scared pet cat. And of course, knowing this can determine what happens to the animal. Do you find this a big issue around the country?
This is such a common, issue. And this kind of gets back to a question you asked earlier about, well, what about the welfare of the cats out on the street? Are they able to fend for themselves? Are they healthy and all the rest of it? The greatest danger for these cats, really, in many communities, not all, many communities, is ending up in a shelter, especially if it's a crowded shelter, as so many are. Again, even if they have some sort of rigorous temperament testing, which is a pretty unusual thing to have, the cat shows up, it's shut down, it's deemed feral, and that can really be a death sentence in many, many shelters. And as you pointed out, and you know, you certainly know this, I know this as a pet owner, you know, a number of mine show up at the veterinarian's office and could easily be deemed, you know, this is not a socialized cat, this is, you know, and no, they're just, they're fearful, they're in a different environment, and again, you imagine in a shelter where the clock is ticking from the moment they come through the door, that determination, again, can often be a death sentence. So shelters, again, this is part of the Best Friends community cat programs, we do, it's sometimes called shelter neuter return or return to field. We, you know, if they're healthy and of age, they get fixed, vaccinated, and they go right back where we found them, and what you find is, in some cases, that means getting reunited with their owner. It means, again, this is a cat who's been supported by the community, so now they're reunited with kind of their community supporters. Better all the way around. And again, as I mentioned previously, they're also not burdening the shelter with another intake.
Very good. Peter Wolf, Cat Initiatives Analyst at Best Friends Animal Society, thank you so much for your expertise and valuable information you shared with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or service. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.